Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
As always, an honor and a privilege to be with you here on Radio America. Thank you for tuning us in. You know what the show is all about. It's about your finance. It's about the questions that you have about your home, your family, and your finances. And perhaps we can answer those questions in a way that benefits you, that keeps money in your pocket, keeps your savings growing, and keeps you feeling good about being alive here in this great country called America. Speaking of savings, my first guest today will be talking about that very thing. Roger Michaud is the chair emeritus of an organization called the College Savings Foundation. They did a survey recently. He's here to tell us what that survey proves about how you're reacting and what you're doing about the huge college debt that we all face. And then we're going to turn it over to Melody Judge. Melody is going to talk about your mortality, something none of us really like to face, it seems. But when you talk about retirement, you're talking about planning, the mortality planning for what's going to happen to you, when you can break out in retirement, and what happens when you die. She's got some interesting facts and figures that I think, for instance, how much should you save at 30 or 40 or 50? And is it okay to retire at 70 or 65 or not at all? Points that we think you'll find very interesting. But first, we turn to Roger at the College Savings Foundation. Roger, welcome to Home and Family Finance. Nice to have you here.
Well, thanks for having us.
Let me talk about this. I think it's fascinating. Folks, in they did their 2015-2016 state survey, College Savings Survey, was conducted by them, and they did over 800 parents across the country with various income levels. And they asked the question, you know, what are you doing? Are you saving more? Are you saving less? How are you planning to combat and face this student debt, this huge student debt that's now stretches into the trillions of dollars? Roger, from your perspective, was there anything encouraging or discouraging?
Well, this is our ninth annual survey, and it was very encouraging. It seems each year parents are becoming more involved, more focused, and reaching their goals, which is trying to send their children in most cases, and in some cases their grandchildren, to the university of their choice. We found that one-third of parents, surprisingly, are still shouldering student debt of their own, and that has made a big difference. It's helped them plan ahead and make decisions early in their children's lives to save more effectively. 51% of parents have already started saving, which we think is terrific. It's up from 45% last year. And as a measure, a significant percentage of college savers, those parents and grandparents that are committed to it, have saved more than $5,000 per child. I think the most important thing to keep in mind, though, is that you don't need $5,000 to get started. You can get started saving in a college savings program for as little as $15 to $25, and you can do it systematically, adding to that account on a monthly basis if you'd like to do that.
Roger, help us. How did we get here in the first place? I mean, why weren't we saving over the many past years? How does our debt get to over $1 trillion, higher than the credit card debt? How did we arrive here?
Yeah, I think if you take a look at escalating college costs, that's problem number one. The college costs have grown over the last 10 and 20 years at more than double the rate of inflation. So that's a significant part of it. The other is that there's just not enough grant and scholarship money available for everyone. So parents are making the decision, children, students are making the decision to take on student loan debt. Student loan debt now stands at $1.2 trillion and growing. On average, if you look at this past year's graduating class, luckily about a third graduated with no student debt, but the other two-thirds on average took on average $26,000 in student loan debt, and they got to start paying that the day they step out of their university with their graduation.
From your perspective, Roger, and we're talking with Roger Michaud, who knows a thing or two, folks, about this. He is chair emeritus of the College Savings Foundation. How are we going to get out of that? I guess my point is, should parents, should students expect that the government is going to help us eliminate this debt somehow, or is this a debt that has to be paid, must be paid, and will be paid on the backs of parents and students?
Yeah, well, our survey also found an interesting finding, which is that parents, for the most part, are relying less on having a full expectation that the government's going to take care of this for them. In fact, it's lower single digits across the board, across all age groups. So I think what we're seeing is that parents today have felt a real impact to their own lives in terms of the student debt they've accumulated and are now paying back and saying, if I really pay some attention to this, do my homework, and get started as early as possible, maybe my child won't be faced with a future of such a high amount of student loan debt down the road. So I think it's been an eye-opener for them. It's reality because a significant percentage of them are currently carrying student loan debt while they're having children, and they're thinking down the road, maybe if I do some work on this today, begin saving as early as possible, it'll impact my child in terms of the amount of money they may need to borrow to pay for their college costs.
You know, I have three children who are now young adults. All of them graduated from college, the last one in May of this year. And I've talked to him and others and to all of them about how they feel about this college debt. While they are, I don't think the word is angry, they realize what significant amount of debts are out there. But they seem to have a sense that somehow the government is going to step in here and cut their debt in half or do something. Do you share that sense?
Well, we do hear that, in terms of legislators, just the current administration in Washington, as well as, many members of both the Senate and the House, are suggesting that we've got to help these folks reduce their student loan burden, and forgiveness might be a route to take, or at least in the early going, a significant reduction in interest rates being charged to these students. But in the end, if you think about it, if this debt just doesn't go away, it's money that was loaned to them and paid directly to colleges and universities, and it's probably not the right or the correct way to take a look at it and say, I assume a few years down the road, the government's going to send me a letter that says you no longer have to pay your student loan debt back, because it's a hard number that was spent, and someone has to be responsible for it. Now, in terms of lowering interest rates on student loans, there's a lot of conversations related to that, and I think we may see some progress as we continue to move on.
Let's talk about that coming up in just a minute. Roger Michaud is Chairman Emeritus of the College Savings Foundation, the leading nonprofit helping American families save for their children's college education. We'll hear more from him when we come back. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
My guest is Roger Michaud. He's Chairman Emeritus of the College Savings Foundation, and we're talking about student debt and what we should do or what can be done about it. And I think you seem to feel the way I do. I think we send the wrong message to our children if we say, okay, you made these debts in terms of getting your education, we paid schools, and then all of a sudden we're going to wipe it out. That's antithetical to the whole idea of being responsible. But I think one of the things I heard you say is we might be able to be helpful by lowering the actual interest rate that's paid. Is that a thought?
That's several pieces of legislation are looking at that, and it's probably a good way to ease the burden. But to think down the road that your student loan debt is just going to disappear and you'll be good to go is probably not the plan that you want to have in place. The plan that you need is prior to taking on that student loan debt, that you consider a lot of other things that could impact, the amount of debt you graduate with. Are you saving? Or is the child working during their school years, at least in the summer and during breaks? It really goes back to the school that you pick as well. You've got to do a lot of homework in terms of what school you're considering attending. You can have a terrific education to become a nurse or a teacher or what have you at an in-state public school with a terrific opportunity, as opposed to a private school that may cost in excess of $45,000 or $50,000 to earn that same degree and get you the same job. So I think homework behind the scenes early makes a big impact.
Choices. I mean, make the right choices. And this other thing we want to say, too, is people say, well, what can I do? Well, I tell you what you can do. And, Roger, bear me out on this if I'm right. Call your representative. If you think the rates are too high, the interest rates ought to be cut down, go to your representative and tell them how you feel and ask them to reflect that in the Congress. Is that not the right way to do this?
It all starts from the bottom, right? It's all of us making having those key conversations and making the point that something needs to be done. Here's a beginning. Here's a way to at least reduce the burden of student loan debt on young college graduates. And then down the road, if there's better ideas and people are going to be much more creative, then we can consider those. But I think right now the number one opportunity that's possible is to reduce the interest rates on some of these longer-term student loans.
That's right, and it won't just happen, folks. My point to you is that you are not powerless here. If you are concerned about this, talk to your representatives. I'm not saying you go in and say wipe the debt out. I don't think that's the right thing. I really don't, and I've got debt from all three kids. But I do think we have the opportunity to say, look, don't make money on this deal here. Let us pay you back and pay the principal, but let's lower the rate, the interest rate, so that we can make these affordable and at least get to ground zero. I think that's a proper way to do this. Do you agree with that, Roger?
Oh, I agree. And, you know, there's probably some other things that could happen along the way. I think some of the discussion is also included. Well, maybe, you know, my student loan costs should be related to the income that I'm earning in the early years at university and college. Right. That makes sense as well.
Yep, absolutely. We're talking with Roger Michaud. We're going to come back in just a moment, and then we're going to talk about the other way that you can make a difference, and that's in savings. You're going to be surprised at the percentage of folks who are taking advantage of a savings plan designed specifically for education. Roger knows about that and how you can get involved. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. We'll be right back. Stay with us, folks. Listening to Radio America. I'm your host, Paul Berry, and we thank you for joining us. Our program sponsor is the Defense Credit Union Council, and we thank them for their continued support, along with CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. They are dedicated to making all of us smarter consumers. And if there's a topic or subject that you want to discuss, please write to me here, Paul Berry, at Radio America, 1100 North Glebe Road, Suite 900, Arlington, Virginia, 22201, or you may contact me on my website at www.paulberry.com. We do want to hear from you. We do care what you think, and we want to bring to you the topics that are of interest to you. Of interest to me is the Defense Credit Union Council. Let me say them again. The Defense Credit Union Council and its member credit unions believe that financial readiness is equal to mission readiness and supports the efforts of Military Saves and their dedication to improving the financial well-being of our troops. Military Saves is a year-round campaign that seeks to motivate, support, and encourage military families to save money, to reduce debt, and to build wealth. As part of the Department of Defense's financial readiness campaign, Military Saves acts as a resource center for information on financial education and counseling. Check out its links to useful websites for military families where they can learn better money management and can find partners who can help military members achieve their financial goals. Military Saves, set a goal, make a plan, and save automatically. Go to militarysaves.org for more information and take the Savers Pledge today. And we thank you, the Defense Credit Union Council. I also thank my guest, Roger Michaud, who is Chairman Emeritus of the College Savings Foundation. They are the leading nonprofit helping American families save, and their recent survey points out some interesting things that we're talking about. Roger, one of the things that I thought was really interesting is that of all of the people that could, only 33%, not 70, not 80, 33% of parents own a 529 college savings plan. I'm not sure many of these people know what it is. Tell us what it is and why only 33% are involved.
We're actually encouraged by the number because it tends to increase each year, and there are many different ways to save for college, obviously, but we think a college savings program is the most effective way. There are tax benefits that are built into it. There are investment options that are available in each of those programs that fall within a wide risk spectrum. So depending on how conservative you are, how aggressive you are, how young your young student or child is, you can pick the right investment for that child. While you're putting money into a 529 college savings plan, it grows tax-free. And as long as the money that you take out of it down the road is used for qualified college expenses, room, board, tuition, what have you, any required fees, that money comes out completely tax-free. So it allows you to build an account without any tax implication, and on the rear end of it, take that money out totally tax-free, as long as you're using it for college expenses. The investment options are numerous, from, in some cases, FDIC-insured savings accounts right on up to mutual funds that invest here in the U.S. and around the globe if you choose to do that. So lots of choices, and we believe the best way to set money aside in a lump sum or systematically to send that child to a school of their choice and of your choice.
So if you've got a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, whatever, growing up, now's the time to open up such a plan. I presume the earlier you open it up, the more you save.
Yeah, the most important thing you could do as a parent or a grandparent who wants to put money aside is get started as early as possible. But keep in mind, it's never too late. You've got a freshman or a sophomore in high school. You still have 3 and 4 years to the first day of school and 4 years after that while they're in school to utilize those money. So it's never too late, but the earlier you start, the better. The larger accounts that we see in the 529 savings world are typically accounts that were started when those children were very, very young. Mm-hmm. And you can go direct if you have the wherewithal and a desire to do it on your own. There are direct sold programs where you go online and you can basically fill an application on your own. But if you think you need a little bit of help along the way, don't be afraid to utilize the expertise of a financial advisor who can pick the right program for you and pick the right investment options along the way as well.
And what about the foundation? Can they reach out to your foundation for more information?
Yeah, they can go to our website, collegesavingsfoundation.org. I think if you were just to Google tips for college savers, you'd get a number of resources, including calculators and what have you, that can help you project what it's going to cost to send your 5 or 6-year-old to a public or a private school. And many of them are even more specific than that. You can choose a college and say, what would it cost to send my child to the University of Maryland or to a private school like Dartmouth or what have you. You pick the school, it's calculated to do the work for you.
That's great stuff. That's great stuff. Roger, thank you so much for your service in the past. Thank you for being here today. We appreciate it. And come back and see us again soon and tell us how we're doing, okay?
Thank you, and best wishes for all the college savers that are listening today.
That's wonderful. Coming up next, are you willing to face retirement? Are you willing to face your mortality? Well, the person that's, you'll hear from her. Melody Judge is next right here on Home and Family Finance.
Helping you be safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
You know, I thought that Roger was very interesting in talking about the fact that only 33% of folks out there are actually using the college savings plan. It's set up for you folks. So, you know, I just reiterate what he said. Go, if you've got young children, now's the time to get involved and do it, please. Put that money aside. It doesn't hurt you now. You can put aside 5, 10, 15, 25 bucks, whatever. It doesn't hurt right now. But I'll tell you what does hurt. When you go to the college that your child wants to go to and they tell you it's $60,000, and you either look at them and say we can't do it or you suffer the consequences by trying and paying. Don't, you know, there's a better way. And the best way is to save. And it's not only savings for your you know, your kid. But how about you? Are you facing your mortality? Are you saving for retirement? Are you saving for, have you done the plans to make sure that you're not a burden to somebody when you do kick off and head to glory? You know, we don't like to face that, and nobody knows that any better than my next guest. Melody Juge is the founder of Life Income Management. She deals with getting you ready to deal with the amount of money you should save for your retirement, how much you should save each month, when should you retire, or maybe you should not. Some very basic things that most of us kind of try to put off. But for those of you who are wondering how to get started, Melody, first of all, welcome to the show, and we really appreciate you being with us.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you today, Paul.
People need to deal with this, don't they? And some of us just don't want to deal with it.
Well, it's human nature. Money is emotional, and it's a whole lot more fun to buy things. With a retirement, you're actually deferring consumption because you will have anywhere between 10 to 40 years of unearned income that you're going to have some support for your Social Security. And most pensions are going by the wayside. So even if you think you have a pension, you really need to plan around it just in case. So it's very scary because money is emotional.
And we leave it to their company. Okay, well, they have a this or they have a fund or they have a 401k. But you have to manage these things, don't you?
Yes and no. Money goes in stages. And I find that the best way to explain this is the three phases of money management. And the first phase is accumulation, the second phase is preservation, and the third phase is distribution. And from the time that you get your first job until you're 55 to 60 years old, you're in an accumulation phase. That means that you're putting away money for many things. But retirement is a different issue. Because when people start out and they get their first jobs and they get their first car and they have student loans and they want to buy a home and they're saving for a down payment and then they have their babies and then they're funding educations, whether it's daycare, private schools, or planning for college for their kids, the last thing they're really focused on is retirement. And really all they usually have is what they have with their companies. And it's the 401k plans for when the companies match or something's automatically taken out of their account. So it's a very complicated area from a psychological standpoint because the language is so different.
Hmm.
The language of finance is very different, and it's not user-friendly, and the language of investing. So then when people get to be 55, 60 years old, now they're moving into preservation stage, and that's when you can actually, it serves you well to have an advisor, mm-hmm. to have all of your assets, as we referred to them, reviewed, and how can those assets be positioned in order to provide you income to help support your lifestyle for the rest of your life. Because if you have to hone this whole subject down, and you say, okay, what is the primary focus? The primary focus is income. Where's the money going to come from so that you don't have to eat cat food when you're 85 years old?
Okay, what's the entry fee? And I hear people that are saying, look, I'm working hard. I don't think I can afford Melody Judge or anybody else at this point. Is there an entry fee? Is there a certain amount of money that I've got to be making before you take an interest in saying, okay, we will advise you for this amount of money and we'll follow through?
You're asking me a personal professional question. It's like, how do I work? I only work with people over 55 years old who have already amassed their retirement dollars, whether it's $600,000 or $6 million. So that's what I personally do. But I take an interest in their children and their grandchildren. And this is what I encourage everyone to do. And for the younger people of today, I encourage them to all have a Roth IRA and may be mindful of the contribution limits. And when they're participating in their 401ks at work, to only participate in the amount that is matched. And then the rest of the money put in your Roth IRA. Because the Roth IRA will not be taxed when you go to take the money out down the road. That's going to be very, 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 very important for the generations to come. And I encourage them to go directly to Vanguard. You know, Jack Bogle was a genius. He's the man that's a CEO, founder and creator of Vanguard.
Right, right.
And they have funds that can be well analyzed, actually. There is, here's something. Here's a good tip for your listeners. I hope everybody's got a pencil.
Okay, I tell you what. Hold on. Stop. Hold right there. Let me take a break. Let our folks out there go get a pencil and get ready, because you're listening to Melody Judge, who is coming up with some good advice for you folks, advice that you might pay a lot more for if you weren't listening to what she has to say. We'll come back and we'll get that information, and we'll find out other things that she knows that she can share that may help you down your retirement road. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
And my guest is Melody Judge, and she is a financial advisor. Her company is, it's called Income Management, LLC, Life Income Management, indeed. And we're talking to you about what you should know if you are really interested in preparing yourself for not only retirement, but for your kids, to have something, a nest egg that you might leave someone. Melanie, you were about to give us some numbers of someone. I think you said it was it Advantage or was it?
I was about to give the audience a reference,
okay.
And that was for the younger folks, okay, our kids and our grandchildren. We want to get them fiscally responsible, and it's very different for them than it was for the boomers or certainly our parents' generation, because the younger people today don't touch money. They really don't have any connection to it. Everything is automatic deposit. They're just kind of numbers out there. Everything is done by credit card, and it's all automation. But they must save for retirement. This is a mandatory issue for them to take care of themselves down the road. So the very best and the most simple way that they can do it, and I feel the most powerful way when they're starting out, is go to Morningstar.com,
mm-hmm.
And that's a rating service. Morningstar offers a report every year called the Fantastic 48, where they rate the mutual fund companies. There's like 40,000 mutual fund companies. They take the top 15,000 and they analyze and they rate them, and they narrowed it down to 48. Now, in those mutual fund companies that you have to choose from investing, you're going to have funds that are called load funds, which are going to charge a fee, and funds that are no load, which do not charge a fee. Now, I think one of the best no-load funds companies available is Vanguard. It was a company created by Jack Bogle, okay? And they have some very good products. And on that sheet, on the Fantastic 48, it's going to tell you everything about how long it's been there, what the internal workings of it, who's the fund manager.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It costs $20 a year to set up your Roth IRA. You go and do that. Now, if you put in $100 a month, $150 a month over 30 years will get you way over $1 million. That's $150 a month. But if you put in $75 a month, do whatever you can do. And when you're putting it in a Roth IRA, you can't touch it for at least 5 years. All right? So this is a way to build tax money for your retirement that's not going to be taxed. All right?
It's wonderful.
Because we don't know where the Social Security is going to go for these young people.
That's right. Absolutely. And
now,
our
generation, it's a matter of dealing with what you have.
Okay.
Because there's not a lot of time to make up for it.
Well, suppose you don't have very much. What do you do then? If you're 55 or 60 and you're one of these many, many people, and you know there are lots out there that are still living paycheck to paycheck or
right.
pension check to pension check. What about them? What can they do?
Okay, well, the first thing you have to do is you have to sit down with a yellow pad and realistically analyze your situation. You have to create what is your cost of living. Most people, believe it or not, do not know their cost of living. I've met three people in 33 years that knew exactly what it costs them to live a month. Most people don't know. They go, oh, about $3,000. Oh, about $7,000.
Yeah, right.
They don't know exactly. You need to know exactly. Your money has to be divided into two categories. One is your basic income. That's a survival income, what you need to live every month, okay? The other one, the other category is lifestyle, okay? If it's dinners out or theater or movies or golf or whatever your propensity is. You need to take a look at if you have car payments. To have a car payment is ridiculous. Maybe you have one too many cars. Maybe you have a mortgage that you no longer can really afford because the maintenance on the house is just a little too much. All these things have to be analyzed. You have to take a look at what your income is going to be, and that's going to be Social Security for most people. And then you take a look at what your set-asides are. In many cases, people need to sell their residence. They need to downsize because they're going to have to live off of Social Security. And remember, when there's a husband and a wife, and each person is getting, one's getting $1,500 a month and the other one's getting $2,200 a month, when the first spouse dies, they will only be allowed to keep one Social Security. So now their income
has been cut,
you know,
in half,
has been reduced dramatically.
Right.
And that, these are the things that make a planning for retirement uncomfortable. But once you get them worked out, there's tremendous power in this.
Mm-hmm.
There's tremendous power, even if you have to downsize, you know, your home and create a new living environment that you can
afford.
You
are in charge. The power
That's
of that
the
comes.
Key. Yeah. That's the key, is being in charge. The key is being, you know, you everybody has a life. And everybody that, once you hit 60 years old, you've got a story. You have medical issues in your life. You've had financial issues. You've had work issues. You've had all kinds of things that have happened to you that you didn't create yourself. They were created by outside influences. And many of those things fall in the minus column. It comes to a point where there's just an acceptance. You just have to accept where you are. And when I go out and teach, it's a very powerful thing to address the truth, because it's a fallacy. People think, oh, if I just had $1 million. That's not true, because if you have $1 million, your lifestyle is in that space also. And so everyone has a similar situation. And you have to be on the lookout. You have to analyze your situation. Like, let's say you get a pension. So you've got your $2,200 a month in Social Security. Your wife has $1,500, and you're getting a pension for $1,500. You need to pay attention and have a little plan. What if that pension stopped?
But wait a minute, Melody. My pension can't stop. I was promised that. I've worked hard for that. You're not saying that could be cut off, are you? Well, you know what? Let's hear what our answer is coming up in just a moment. Melody Juge is my guest here. We're talking about your life income management. Have you managed it, or has it just kind of run its own way? When we come back, what's the answer to that? Can I lose my pension? Certainly not. Stay with us. Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. My guest is Melody Juge. She is the founder of Life Income Management, and we're talking about how well prepared you are for what's next. You're over 60, and you're on the pension, and you're getting over 65, and you're getting Social Security, and all of a sudden, jeepers. Somebody said that the company that's paying your pension can't do it anymore. You have no income. How do you get income? Melody, this happens to people. It happens all the time, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And your reference on this would be Enron and WorldCom and Lehman Brothers, the people who work there. Sure. All of a sudden, everything just stops and people have worked, you know, for 20 to 40 years in one place and they're counting on something. But there's a solution to this. A precautionary measure would be to have part of your investment portfolio, whether it's a few hundred thousand or a few million, into an annuity that you can turn on down the road. Now, I caution my clients. I'm not crazy about variable annuities. They're very, very, very expensive. The internal fees on those are anywhere from 3.25% to 5% a year, and that comes out of the principal. But on your fixed annuities, you're not going to have those kinds of charges. And if you have if you purchase an annuity that will have a life income benefit rider on it, then let's say it's 8 years down the road and you need additional money, you can have that income start coming in. If something were to happen to your pension, you have that income to come in. If you need additional dollars to support a possible long-term care health issue, you could have that income coming in. The one thing that I caution people on regarding annuity purchases is don't put too much money in one contract.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have $200,000 to put into an annuity, you want to get two $100,000 contracts or four $50,000 contracts.
Okay. Diversity.
This way you have more control. Diversity,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you can get them with the same insurance company.
Okay.
But you need to be mindful of the State Guarantee Association within your state because there's an extra layer to consumer protection with the insurance companies.
Forgive me, but I'm just because I want my audience to understand is some of what we're saying, even in terms of annuities and and 401ks, they don't. Some of them simply are not aware of it. So my question is: are there financial advisors who start lower than your number that they can turn to, and if they are, where would they go to find them?
No, I think you have to ask in your community. I caution everyone to be very, very, very careful in terms of interviewing. You have to be aware of licensing because annuities, all you need is an insurance license to procure an annuity from someone. And most annuities are sold. They're not placed in a portfolio. So that is a very, very, very different psychological aspect to it. You know, analyzing your money, deciding that you need an annuity, and actually choosing it for very specific reasons is different than somebody selling you bells and whistles. So I think you have to be careful. Also, if someone just has an insurance license, they don't have the ability, and it's against the law for them to review and analyze any securities products that you have. So you need something that's all-inclusive.
Yep, and I guess the point being is, can I go to a website? Is there somewhere where financial advisors are listed out or are rated so that I can decide who I'm going to turn to? Or
You have people in your hometowns, like you have offices like Charles Schwab,
mm-hmm.
you know, names like that you can actually go to with your $50,000, your $100,000. But remember, you always have to have a cash reserve. That's another very powerful point in retirement. You need to have a cash reserve that's going to cover all of your insurances mm-hmm. for their deductibles and co-payments. That's another way you can protect yourself during retirement.
My guest is the very, very capable, and I'm very impressed, Melody Juge, founder Life Income Management, LLC. Planning is the key, folks. You have to plan. Whether you like it or not, take the time to do so. Melody, would you come back again and talk to us? I love listening to you.
I would love to. I would love to. Yes, I would love to. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Folks, we're glad that you joined us as well here on Radio America. Home and Family Finance is all about and for you. Stay with us. We'll stay with you. We're here back here next week at the same time. Al Peterson, thank you so much. And we will see you again next week.